My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the season one wrap-up. We're talking about Better Call Saul.
We're talking about Better Call Saul. We're talking about extended scenes. We're talking about DVD features. We're reading your responses to the first season.
Yeah, they're calling them the least essential special features of all time. I know I say that all the time, but it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just have a little bit of that to go through, and then we're going to read your responses. Reminder, we're starting the season two, and we're going to be moving to weekly. Then that's going to be fun. I'm excited to dive in.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, so the special features, not very good. I also want to complain really quickly about the DVD packaging, Blu-ray packaging, which is like one of the worst packages I've ever seen in my life.
It's a fucking nightmare is what it is. So do you have the Blu-ray like complete series?
Yes.
Okay. So it has the Giga case.
Yeah. It's a Giga case where they double up on the little nubs, the DVD holding nubs. You don't double up on those.
No.
You can't put two DVDs on one of those. I mean, you can, but you shouldn't.
You could, but if you're a madman. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating. And then when I opened it, they of course were all like just kind of jumbled.
They're all just loose. how do I fully open this without ruining all
these without exploding, without a DVD pinata, a Blu-ray pinata coming out of this.
Like Sonic's rings.
Exactly. Every time you punch the box at a Better Call Saul, it explodes. So demerits there. And then I think these are kind of bad special features. They're fine. Some of them are fine.
Get ready for for a real desert in the deleted scenes category. Yeah.
Also, yeah, those are not good.
Yeah.
So it starts off, there's like a literally short thing called Better Call Saul Day One, which is just a little documentary about them getting together and filming the first day.
Yeah.
It's sweet. They all are very happy because it's 80% of the same crew.
Yeah.
You know? The weirdest thing about this to me is there's a shot of Bob Odenkirk and he has like a PA holding an umbrella over him for the sun, which feels very non-Bob Odenkirk to me. Later he's holding the umbrella himself, but I was like, man, that does not feel like Bob to me.
Yeah.
I don't know this person I parasocially just kind of like.
You see all those, you see it happen all the time in the Breaking Bad features as well.
But to like Cranston. Yeah. You know, like it makes sense, Cranston, but Bob Odenkirk, I expect him to be a little bit more like, he's on Mr. Show.
A little bit more salt of the earth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the first thing they shot was the skate park with the twins.
Weird first thing to shoot.
Yeah, not sure why. I don't know the logic behind doing those kind of things. But
if you watch this without context, you would think that the twins were major characters.
Yes.
Because like they keep showing up. They're introduced before Ray. Before Ray Seahorn.
It's sweet but inessential.
Yeah.
I'd say. Like, you're not missing it.
Nope. There's a longer kind of making of thing called Creating the First Season, which is an awful lot of, boy, we knew that Breaking Bad was a big show. It was really daunting. There's some information here, but it's mostly a way to see the people talk. One thing that stuck out was the real cool like mixing, the re-recording mixer guy's desk with the automated sliders and stuff, and it's like I want one of those
polishing and cleaning mixing boards.
Yeah,
your new hobby. Yeah. it's again, I don't know who these are for. Like a lot of the time, like you can get insight. And then later in Better Call Saul, they start doing the little like how-tos from the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are cute. Mm-hmm. And the Los Pollos Hermanos like employee videos are great.
Yeah.
And the Madrigal employee videos. But like it takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about slowing down the pace a little bit because they just liked hanging out with Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes sense.
No.
As a thing. And they Michael McKean was one of those things where they just wanted him.
Yeah.
You know, they knew he'd be the person for it.
Mm-hmm. To the point where like Bryan Cranston and Michael McKean were like doing a play, and Cranston was like, "You should play Saul's brother on the Better Call Saul show." It's like, "Oh, well, I hadn't thought about that." And it's like, "You'll be getting a call later, fucking Faye emissary."
There's one called "Good Cop, Bad Cop, Becoming Mike." Mm-hmm. And we learned that Jonathan Banks came up with the decision for what happened to Mike's son in the very first scene in Breaking Bad where he drops off Kaylee.
Yeah.
pulled Vince aside and goes, this woman is not my daughter.
Yes.
You know, this is my daughter-in-law. Mm-hmm. And he kind of talks about his character. This is also a thing where, like, it's fun to watch Jonathan Banks talk, mm-hmm. but it's all stuff you just know from watching the show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what these are for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And he's talking about it as, you know, like saying like, yeah, no, this is all stuff that is true about the character. It is unclear how much of that comes from him and how much of that comes from the writers.
Yeah.
Like or how much it is, you know, a collaboration between the two. It's, yeah.
It ultimately doesn't matter that much. Like, it just feels, again, really inconsequential to me. Mm-hmm. And so much of this is just people really liking Jonathan Banks. And like, we know. Mm-hmm. He's fucking great. Like, it's the same problem with the podcast and with the commentaries, where it's just everybody talking about how good everyone else is.
Yeah, it's a big backslapping circle. Yeah.
Big backslapping circle. Bummer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called In the Studio for the Better Call Saul music video. and this is Vince Gilligan really liked this country musician I did not know called Junior Brown.
Yeah.
And they had him sing the song for the Better Call Saul music video, which I did not know was a thing. You can see it on this DVD, but I'd never seen it before.
Yeah. It's fine.
yeah. He's a country guy. He's good at it.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of cute to watch them geek out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but kind of cute's about what we get.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I was just admiring the stuff in the studio. Yeah. So if you
like looking at equipment, this DVD special feature set has all the thrills of a catalog. If you can imagine flipping through a catalog for high-end sound equipment,
hey,
imagine this thing.
It's not a video of it being used.
You have to go to a link for that. You have to go to an online catalog for that.
Yeah.
If you go to reverb.com, you get basically this entire thing.
This is, it comes across as Vince and Peter being very indulgent, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, them just kind of like workshopping lyrics on the fly, which seems like a real nightmare for Junior Brown.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, not fitting the meter.
Yeah.
You know, correctly, him struggling with the meter, but he did a good job of it. You can watch the video. The video is also fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. My least favorite thing is In Conversation, Bob Odenkirk and Michael McKean. This is fucking nuts. this is CIA torture. Like, there's an old Tim and Eric sketch called All Dolled Up, and it's this running thing where it's two old actual Hollywood vets, and they just sit in chairs talking about people they'd worked with while makeup artists apply increasingly extreme makeup to them.
Yep.
That's the sketch. Exactly what this is. These two ostensibly funny people just being like, oh, yeah, you know, do you ever see the Mixed Nuts? Yeah, they had, you know, Jonathan Brownman in that. Oh, he was great. He was great. And then, you know, they had a Johnny Dinglefinger.
Mm,
you know, he was in there as well. And he's like, yeah, you know, he was also in this. And it's just them going back and forth like that. I felt like I was trapped in a Will Hughes just naming people who are in things, but for old sketch comedy.
Yeah.
Like radio sketch, old timey sketch comedy.
Not even that. Like just little like play productions in like Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Mark Maron is now gone. We don't have to listen to comedians go, who were your guys?
Yeah.
It is the most, it's fucking death.
Yeah.
I cannot express how uninteresting this conversation is. It's just one shot of them sitting in chairs vaguely facing each other.
Uh-huh.
To you, there's no like visual interest to it. This one's on YouTube, so you can watch this if you want to.
Yeah.
I kind of recommend people do it just to see how boring these two very talented, funny people can be.
Right. Yeah. It's just a bunch of like, oh, and that's when I knew that I had to call. I know. Wait, what? Yeah.
Yep.
Michael Crinstworth.
Yep.
And, yep. Oh, Michael.
He was in the, did you ever see him on this? Oh yeah. He was in this with this. It's just names you've never heard of.
Uh-huh.
Like old timey comedy names.
Yeah. To be, you know, so you,
I recorded 12 minutes of this.
I watched all.
There's no information in this.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you were multitasking.
Yes. No, I was not sitting down. Yeah. I was not holding my hand on the stove.
No, I was shooting this up directly. I had taken this thing and put Pure Uncut in conversation, Bob Odenkirk and Michael McKean into my veins.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually they get around to, some actual information about their characters and the choices and stuff. And like, there's mm-hmm. some stuff just where they're just like talking about like the reveal for the series. The reveal about Chuck, right? Something that's interesting about this is they did all of this special feature stuff after the shooting, after airing, even they're talking, they're talking about like, well, so like, how do people on like how do people react, to Chuck being an asshole, and like they're just like really just talking about people being heartbroken and stuff. Yeah. So like they were doing a little bit of stuff where it's just like them reacting to choices, as the people who need to play those parts, which was interesting and fine. You also get something here. They'd already figured out the split between Jimmy and Chuck over their mom. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't even get a mention this season outside of, you called mom instead of me.
That stuff is ostensibly interesting, but again, it's just saying the actors know what happens on the show as well. Mm-hmm. And they did actors work.
Yes.
Like, this is literally what actors do, right? Is like a good actor makes choices and comes up with backstories, like things that do not get shown mm-hmm. in the actual product that inform the performances. That's the craft of acting in a lot of mm-hmm. ways.
Yeah.
And just knowing it happened, mm-hmm. I still think is a low value piece of information for a half hour of listening to comedy names.
Yeah.
I assumed they figured some of this stuff out because like, mm-hmm. that's what actors do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's interesting on a really, really harsh curve.
Yeah.
Or a very generous curve rather.
Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, like you watch the DVD special features because you're interested in the show and you're interested in how it's made. Otherwise, why would you go to the thing that says how we did season one or whatever? But like something like this and something like a lot of the, just kind of talking head dialogue in a bunch of the other things is like hearing people talk about their work, especially for actors or people in showbiz, and unless they are going to talk about very specific things or what almost was, et cetera, like it is not as interesting as the product itself, but it's still on the disc and it's still sharing
The
real estate, right?
It's not art.
Yeah.
And it's barely trivia mm-hmm. As a thing. It's basically, did you ever see that old PBS, the Inside the Actor's Studio?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's excruciating. I'm more familiar with the SNL parody, but yeah.
Yeah, the SNL parody, David Cross has a mm-hmm. bit about that. They did that on Mr. Show as well. And it's just this,
mm-hmm.
Tell me about your thing. Oh yeah, I the thing's very important to me. You have to take it seriously. You have to mix drama with comedy.
No.
It's crazy.
And then asking Dan Castellaneta, is Homer in the room with us?
Yes.
Can he come down? And
it is so fucking self-serious and weird. and again, in a way that I always felt Bob Odenkirk was kind of above,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not.
Yeah. No. There's a table read for Uno, which I didn't watch all of, but I did see Bob give like a sweet like introduction address to the assembled mm-hmm. people for it.
And then reads are only interesting to me when they're like an episode where somebody finds out they're dying.
Yeah.
Or their character dies, or like when they get really choked up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of, again, kind of interesting.
Yes.
I like gag reels in general. This gag reel is good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you made a note of this. A lot of things just fall off walls and not things you expect to.
The whole first like quarter of it is just like Bob Odenkirk yanking a payphone out of its stand.
They're in the hospital where Chuck's in there and just things fall off the wall unprompted.
That nothing happened. That one painting or print or whatever falling off of the wall in the courtroom.
Yeah. It just everything is kind of sticky tack.
Uh-huh.
Put up with that. My favorite one of these is when Mike is shooting the cops that killed his son. Mm-hmm. The cop dies. There's the thing before he pulls the trigger. Mm-hmm. And Mike in character looks down at the gun like, what the hell?
Yeah.
That's very funny.
Yeah. And just like, I don't know, something that I hit on, and this is a very obvious thing to say about gag reels or whatever. Like, this is footage from the day. So it is like lit and shot like it looks, you know? So like when you watch it, it really is like the actual scene.
Yes.
Except it goes in a way that you don't remember. Like that is the thing about gag reels that I kind of decided was like, you know, what if this was a creepypasta and somebody was watching this and then just like, oh wait, everybody forgot their lines.
Yeah. Like, again, like a Tim and Eric thing, like where, you know, the guy cleaning the bathroom and he doesn't know he's in a commercial for the Cinco vertical shower system.
It also
like these as an opportunity for actors to make jokes.
Yeah.
You know, Mike making that joke. Bryan Cranston was a master at this. Mm-hmm. Bryan Cranston was very funny.
Yeah.
In these, I hope we get more of that. So, and I understand the first season, like they're getting used to it.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. We have a smattering of deleted scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a whole lot, but a little bit.
Yeah. Deleted, extended, and then like what we have for Miho. Which is two little pieces of like, we were shooting for a montage and we needed to do something. Here's what happened. So the first thing is Jimmy's date with that milfy looking lady and Miho when the guy is snapping the breadsticks, right? You get to see the full scene play out with dialogue as it was written. Kind of this boring first date talk about, you know, just when you were little and you came home from playing, what were you thirsty for? You know?
Yeah. Odd question to ask.
Yes.
Yeah. Like liquids, like the same thing I was thirsty for as a kid. Like when I drink as a kid, Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So it turns into eventually, thirsty for pussy. You know, I would dip my fingers into the tang and then lick it. It's like just real, like, good Lord.
Yeah. And they cut it out because, of course, you know, they don't use that, you know, but like they have to amuse themselves somehow. They're just shooting. You just make up some bullshit.
Yeah. You know? I think this was written.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think that it felt like it was not to me, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. In the commentary, they talk about being very defensive about the dialogue in it.
Yeah, they just come across as it's like, I don't know, like it's fine. It's fine as a montage. It is interesting to, you know, to learn what happens behind the choice to do a montage in this.
They're not like, just saying this, watermelon rutabaga.
Yeah, with this Jimmy in the courtroom thing, which I only watched a couple of like a little bit of this, like a couple of setups, but for the montage of Jimmy just doing public defender work, they didn't have anything written, but it was just Bob Odenkirk in different suits with different defendants and prosecutors, just like ad-libbing stuff and like covering the entire set. It's like, okay, well, you need to move over here and be on this side, you know, to give us stuff to cut with too. Yeah.
You know, semi-interesting from a production standpoint, even though astute viewers could figure out how they had him stand in different places.
Yeah, I probably could have guessed.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, you get to see how the sausage is made, kind of, but it's not sausage.
Yeah.
Bingo. There's a very short scene called I Just Need 5 Minutes. Jimmy goes to Mike for help at the courthouse parking lot. Not the porking lot. That's from the previous deleted scene. and Mike tries to intimidate him away. But then because, you know, Jimmy's $4,000 that he owes for helping with those cops, his bill ends up kind of being the deciding factor here.
Yeah. They have commentary on this. It is interesting because they say like, yeah, if 5-0 didn't end the way that it did, we would have kept this. But it just like the way that Jonathan Banks is acting in here, the way that Mike is acting, trying to Bigfoot Saul, trying to Bigfoot Jimmy is not, doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah. It doesn't match up with what we saw before.
Yes. So it is weird. It is strange characterization.
Yeah. The Kettle commentary is good. Mm-hmm. This is the two actors who play the Kettlemans, Julianne Emery and Jeremy Shemos, doing commentary over their characters.
Yeah.
For this. And it's really, those are unsung performances.
Oh my God.
Very, very strong for not huge parts.
Mm-hmm. And like, if this is all ad-libbed, if this is them just being these characters, and admittedly, like the remit for either of them is not especially complex, you know, but like they just figure out a way to reaffirm every horrible thing you know about them whenever they speak.
It's like, really cute. I'm looking forward to when they come back.
Yeah.
in the show. I like seeing how far they'd fallen later. Yeah. There's one for Pimento, which is Jimmy celebrating in the courthouse after winning over Schweikert in court. If you remember Chuck saying, you know, they're just trying to nickel and dime us and wear us out. You're always going to win this. Yeah. It's just him celebrating before going over to Chuck's. I understand why it was cut.
Yeah, it's him like standing there. You don't know how things went. And then Jimmy starts reciting lines boisterously from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And then finally in Marco, Jimmy shows up early for his meeting with Hamlin to get his check. Mm-hmm. Says he'll wait.
I don't know. It's so funny that they included this as a cutscene, but also that there was commentary for it.
Yeah, and there's commentary for him deciding to wait. And like, you, with the best will in the world, you could say there's a little bit of characterization to him showing up early. Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of see why they did it, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not being the allegations of this season, possibly using some editing. Or could use additional editing, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this just exists to show the utility of, oh, we start with Kim finding him waiting in the library, or waiting in the lobby.
Yeah. And then finally, there's one with Bob kind of ad-libbing while the directors use this kaleidoscope filter on him for a montage. Similar to the courtroom one, he's just making up stuff so they can do this montage thing.
And, you know. The commentary is funny because you get to hear the glee about like, yeah, no, this isn't like After Effects. You know, we had to like dig in a warehouse to get this thing that they used in the 20s for this exact kind of montage.
Yeah. It's the montage with Jimmy and Marco doing scams and flams.
Yes.
Yeah. So kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great set, not a good crop. I'm looking forward to them getting better. Perhaps.
Perhaps. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. Time will tell. The important part of this episode, though, is your responses. We asked for everyone's responses to season one. We'll do this every season like we did with Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. I'll get us started here with Dan. Dan says, when my boyfriend, now fiance, congratulations, Dan.
Congrats.
And I met, I'd seen Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul like two or three times each, while he'd never seen either one. I convinced him to watch Breaking Bad with me, and he was into it. We watched Breaking Bad at a pretty good clip, but our pace through Saul has been a lot slower. We're about halfway through season five as of the time of writing. The reason for this is that we like Kim and Jimmy too much, and in fact relate to them a great deal. Goofy, well-meaning, but often impulsive guy, and hot blonde woman. I was cis when we started dating, but I'm Kim Maxing now.
Hey!
So as the show progresses and their relationship heads for inevitable complications, watching it makes him so anxious.
Yeah. That'll happen. Like you're in season five. Like shit's pretty rough already.
Yeah.
Like not as bad as it's gonna get. But like after the end of season three, stuff changes for them pretty significantly.
Yeah. Also just a note, like Dan is the only name we have here.
Yes.
If that may have come through from email or something like that. So apologies if that is not appropriate.
That is the that is the name that they used in the form. I was also confused and went back and double checked. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Nat says, I'm so excited for Better Call Saul coverage. For all the pacing and tonal differences from Breaking Bad, I consider this one of my favorite TV shows ever. Already, writing as of Uno, you've illuminated a major point for me. I never really internalized the Jimmy is 41 in season one. I always found Bob Odenkirk playing a kid in his early 30s to be part of the surreality of the show. Apparently, I bought into Chuck's treatment of him without even thinking about it. One more fun tidbit. One of my more random niche interests is the USA show Burn Notice. It's action schlock garbage, but it's a guilty pleasure, and it's a constant stream of random character actors, results in some very odd cameos from some familiar faces, i.e. Jesse's narcotics counselor doing an arc as a villain therapist turned criminal mastermind. Yay. One episode also features Patrick Fabian, Howard Hamlin himself, as a charming con man, the face of a multi-million dollar scam. It's a decent performance, and seeing the action in the role that he would eventually degrade Jimmy for occupying is a very fun parallel.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen Burn Notice. My main thing about that is an old Aziz Ansari stand-up special where he talks about his cousin watching TNT a bunch, like his young cousin being really in, and he's like, who the hell watches Burn Notice? Harris watches Burn Notice. He loves that shit. And I can't see Burn Notice without thinking that delivery.
Yeah. I had a girlfriend who was really into Burn Notice.
People like, on Burn Notice.
At the time, she was Burn Notice, Gossip Girl, and what is it? True Blood.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Almost two out of three shows that are like critically liked.
Yes.
You know, kind of, or one, I guess Gossip Girls is the one that people has some cachet. I think Burn Notice and True Blood are both considered to be kind of fun trash if you like that kind of trash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True Blood is kind of interesting to me, but then they started bringing in like fairies and werewolves and shit.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, Southern vampires I'm fine with. And then it's just like, oh no, everything exists.
Right.
Yeah. Just, and all just they do is fuck.
Just cram like, it all in.
Yeah. It's like the worst World of Darkness playgroup.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. But yeah, like Jimmy's arrested development, I think is important to this. And I'm not surprised that somebody would read him as needing to be, much younger than he actually is intended to be.
No. Luke says, I love the Breaking Bad season of Best Quality Vacuum and I'm excited to follow you all into Better Call Saul. I watched all of Breaking Bad after it finished as a marathon on Netflix. Better Call Saul, on the other hand, I watched pretty much as it came out. Watching Breaking Bad again with the podcast was a lot of fun, but I'm much more attached to Better Call Saul, so I'm excited. Interestingly, I watched Better Call Saul in the UK and then for the last season or two in Japan. In these two regions, it's treated as a Netflix original. I even remember the amusing way reviews talked about how unique and original it was for Netflix to release a show weekly instead of all at once. Even better, the infamously up-its-own-ass Guardian had a review with this immortal line. Like all the best comedies, it doesn't actually make you laugh.
Oh my God.
Jokes are basically tricks, though in these post-cynical times, who wants to be tricked into laughing? Holy shit.
The fucking Guardian, man.
That sucks. P.S. In defense of the montages, I do think Better Call Saul does a much better job of making me aware of how much time has passed than Breaking Bad did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Like, I can see it.
Yeah.
Kind of. They do montages that are just one scene enough times.
Yeah.
That it's like I knew the time passed, but I don't begrudge anyone who likes the montages. They're just not my favorite thing. Some of them I like more than others.
It's a stylistic thing, right? Yeah. Sometimes they feel more called for.
Yeah.
And season one doesn't have a lot of those to me.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing me that Guardian line. I like it when somebody writes a horrible line.
Uh-huh.
I was reading about this new season of Fiona and Cake. Is not really to my taste. Like, it's not as good as the first season.
Okay.
And I was reading about it, and I found the Wikipedia, and they were talking about representation in Fiona Cake, which is, like, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, LGBTQ plus representation, which I'm super into. Mm-hmm. But somebody had written a thing where they said, this series frees Adventure Time from its heteronormative prison.
What the fuck?
Something like that, which is insane. That's an insane thing to say. It was actually more harsh than that.
Did you see a single interaction between Princess Bubblegum and Marceline?
Well, they were saying because they didn't canonicalize it until too late.
What?
You know, which, because it's not canon right at first. It's okay. Like it becomes canon later. But also, it's about a little boy.
Yeah.
Like, he's the main character of the show. Like, it's just, it was an insane thing to write.
Yeah.
Watching that show and being like, fuck, man, this is could only be good if there were like just kind of gay people off screen is insane to me. Log off, writer for Polygon, for the love of God.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, like the main character is a little boy who doesn't know how to be a human because no other humans are out there.
Yeah,
and talking dog.
Yeah, then there's a talking dog. Like he makes a magical pancake robot or magical pie robot.
Uh-huh.
And it's their third best friend is a sentient Game Boy who's non-binary.
Uh-huh.
Like, what do you want? And what they wanted was just the ship that they liked. It was just fandom Tumblr bullshit that makes me furious.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, it's quoted in Wikipedia.
Oh,
so it's a primary, you know, opinion of somebody's looking up the critical response to that show.
Ooh,
and that's what made me mad.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Tiresome. Let's... Let's see. Danny writes, hi, y'all. First time, long time. Love the show and was a little surprised that you're lukewarm on the montages. To me, they're not unrelated to something you talk about in the Breaking Bad episodes, where the show is committed to making crime hard and gross and boring. To me, the montages in Better Call Saul expand that to everything is ugly and hard and boring. And seeing characters like Jimmy or Kim or Mike put in painstaking work makes the coincidences that blow everything up, Tuco's grandmother, Chuck cracking his head, the baseball cards, etc., hit harder. Finally, I think they work well in this show as a response to Walt. Walt, of course, has a few montages showing process, but they're more about watching the gears in his brain and showing off how smart he is. Whereas in Better Call Saul, they show how people operate in this world when they aren't a cartoon supervillain. Again, love the show, and I'm very excited to hear you all discuss the baseball cards.
Yeah, the baseball cards. Squat cobbler. I can understand why somebody might like them. I just disagree. Mm-hmm. I'm not against these things happening, mm-hmm. Which would tell me how these people operate. It's just showing it very leisurely with a piece of cutesy music that I don't like that much.
It, especially early on here, it does feel a little bit like Breaking Bad season one has an awful lot of super fast cut montages to some of the worst music you've ever heard.
Yes.
Like this and is not an unusual thing for them.
I didn't like it there either.
Yeah.
It's, I think that it feels stronger in Better Call Saul because of the general slower pace. Mm-hmm. And maybe because the first season of Breaking Bad is so short that it kind of shakes them off a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it as everything is ugly, boring, and hard, because a lot of the things they're doing in the montage are neither ugly, boring, or hard. They're just boring to me, but the characters are fine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll show something really mundane that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't bug me, no. Too much, but it's really like everything about the Jimmy talking to the Milfinito is like everything about that is what I don't like.
Yeah.
In these. Yeah. But yeah, glad people like them, mm-hmm. Wouldn't take it away from anybody.
Yeah.
Kate says, "Hi, Gary and Kay. I just finished watching Better Call Saul for the first time when we announced that you'd be starting a podcast covering the Vince Gilliverse. Needless to say, this excited me as a Breaking Bad fan, but is especially eager for the coverage of its sister show to begin. I personally think this is a much more confident show from its very first season, and I love its more playful energy, as well as less time spent wallowing the depths of human misery, as typically seen with characters like Jesse. Better Call Saul's first season plays a very intricate long game, concealing as long as it possibly can the cruel twist regarding the truth about Chuck's attitude towards Jimmy, while keeping us focused on Howard as a red herring antagonist. On rewatch, Chuck's scenes are rewarding in the same way watching Alien for the second time gives a whole new meaning to Ash's words and actions. Paying close attention to Chuck, particularly when his EHS symptoms do or do not flare up, makes it seem so painfully obvious in hindsight that Jimmy is about to have a knife jammed into his side and twisted. Jimmy finally drags the truth out of his brother only after presenting an airtight case to him and demanding answers. And once Chuck is cornered and starts ranting, reluctantly at first and then immediately going into full-blown loathing, he absolutely cannot stop himself. It's so devastating and petty. I don't think I've ever seen a story with an antagonist quite like Charles McGill, and I've wrestled with the fact that he's my favorite character in the series more or less since this moment."
Yeah.
Well said. Really well done. Some of the stuff they had semi-planned, but Howard was planned to be also a co-antagonist. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that developed as they were doing the show.
Yeah.
It's not quite a red herring. I think they just kind of changed their mind.
Yeah.
A little bit with that.
Mm-hmm. But still ended up working out, right? Yeah. Like you still get the runway to it. And I think that like Howard not being a straightforward, kid from the rich kids camp across the lake is, not as, it is almost as interesting as Chuck being, a real just piece of shit to his brother.
Yeah, the worst guy.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a little while for them to really lean into Howard having additional, they kind of de-vilify him, but they don't quite sympathize him for a little bit. Like it doesn't happen until late where you get to see his home life and everything. Mm-hmm. You might think like, why, Jimmy hates this guy and he shouldn't be throwing bowling balls at his car, mm-hmm. but you don't understand the interior of Howard for a long time.
Yeah.
If I recall, cause I haven't rewatched the middle seasons, but he kind of just goes out of focus for a while.
Yeah. He mostly is like kind of at the edges of the Clifford Maine stuff.
Yeah.
In two and three.
Every once in a while doing something bad to Kim,
yes.
Punishing Kim for something he's mad about. And then Jimmy throws bowling balls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's his one move.
It's what he goes to, like at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to think of another antagonist in television who is exactly like Chuck. And then, the way that is played, especially, with how he's, gone halfway through. Right.
Yeah. Great character.
Love him.
And one of the cool things about Better Call Saul is I feel like it kind of has its cake and eats it too. Mm-hmm. We get a full Chuck arc and that plays out as long as it can. And then we bring in Lalo.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit of like the more razzle dazzle mm-hmm. villain, it kind of contains both.
Yes.
Like, weirdly, Better Call Saul contains Breaking Bad in its back half, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last response here from Andrew saying, I've been waiting for you to get to Better Call Saul, as I think the bait and switch of the big bad is one of the cleverest bits of writing in recent memory. Howard is set up to be the smug and hateable antagonist, only for you to slowly realize that Chuck was the much bigger asshole, willing to bring down an entire law firm over personal pettiness. Howard gets torn between loyalty to his friend and mentor and keeping all of his employees from losing their jobs. I think all of us had some degree of sympathy for Howard, even in the early seasons. Also, give Patrick Fabian some love. My friend saw him at the Pittsburgh airport, and he was totally friendly and fun. Absolutely nothing like Howard Hamlin. Great actor.
Yeah, it'd be weird if he was. you know, but I like hearing that actors are cool when you meet them.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not so big that I feel like he wouldn't stop and chat with you for a moment.
Yeah. Kind of in that nice sweet spot of like having done something very recognizable, but like not, you know, everywhere.
Yeah. Only one thing very recognizable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'd like to see him in other stuff, but he's got a look that just screams Howard Hamlin to me. Like,
yeah,
the previous statement that said he played a, you know, an evil scamming millionaire in Burn Notice just makes tons of sense. He's got that look. The man's too tan. He needs to go into a reverse tanning booth to get more roles.
Gosh. Trying to think, there was something else in there that I was going to respond to, but I don't. So like you do end up sympathizing with Howard over the course of this, because they devilify him, but like it is important that Chuck is fucking awful to Howard as well. Chuck has Howard has Chuck's respect as a professional, but not as a person, and certainly not as an equal.
Well, there's no one Chuck respects that way. Chuck is a sociopath. Like, there's not a person who he respects as a person.
Right.
Like, they don't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, he is the only character in the world to that. Like, it's part of what makes him so despicable. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Get fucked, Chuck. Thanks everybody for writing in. We appreciate it. As mentioned, we're going to go to weekly. We're going to season 2. Looking forward to all that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun.
It is. Yeah. So we take responses over the course of the entire season. So as you listen or do a watch of season 2 yourself, go ahead and write in. That is at duckfeed.tv/contact. Click the best quality vacuum button, and then write in. It'll go to the right place, and we'll round them up at the end of the season.
Yeah. Don't wait until it's too late, because we record the show in advance.
Yes.
Sometimes. So if you're watching season 2 and you have something to say, do it at the time it occurs to you.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Mm-hmm. We appreciate that. Helps us keep doing this, keeps the lights on, does everything. You know, let's hire Gwen, our great producer. Big thanks to Gwen. If you can't do that, you can leave us range reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, or Talk About Us places. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about the show with people and you're like, hey, I know this podcast that's kind of going through it, you might like it. We appreciate that.
We do. Every little bit of that helps us.
Yeah. I had a natural segue to thanking Gwen, so I didn't leave you anything to say.
I will say, as of when this is coming out, oh, nope, sorry, this is coming out in the middle of December. Whoops.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everybody. And if you tuned in and gave to Duckstream, thank you very much for doing so.
Yeah. And we will see you next time.